Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So are Democrats counting their proverbial chickens before they hatch and counting on a blue wave to wrest control of the House and maybe even the Senate in November? That's what Jonathan Alter suggests in his most recent Daily Beast column. He warns that Republican money and a search for progressively pure candidates in Democratic primaries could backfire, and he uses the Cynthia Nixon primary challenge of the more centrist Andrew Cuomo as a prime example, even though it's not a congressional race. And he joins me now, Jonathan, who's written two books about President Obama, among other things. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian.
You're right. Democrats with their heads screwed on right are reviving an old ethic, party and country over personal preference. Tell me why you think Cynthia Nixon's candidacy is, quote, screwy.
Well, first of all, I think she has a perfect right to run, and I think she is arguably doing some good things in pushing Andrew Cuomo to the left. So that's been interesting, and people have a perfect right to vote for her. My concern is what they do with their support for her, and what that support in terms of time and money means, because you could argue that every dollar that goes to a primary fight like that, especially one with a lot of publicity, is one less dollar that would go to elect a Democrat in the 22nd district, the 24th district, or the John Faso's, I think, is the 19th district. So that's three Republican seats that I just mentioned that are in New York. That's not even mentioning a couple of others across the river in New Jersey that are very flippable for the Democrats. And to my mind, that's job one. And not only is it, you know, a little bit more important than a primary fight for governor, it are democracies at stake. The stakes in this election are immensely high in these midterm elections, and I just worry that Democrats are kind of watching, you know, cable news, wringing their hands, engaging in some cases in primary fights that just sap energy from the task at hand.
Isn't this what the Republicans faced with the Tea Party a few years back, and they still managed to control both houses of Congress and elected arguably an extremist to the White House? So there's a flipped argument that says, no, quietly backing the more centrist Democrats dulls turnout. If you energize the base because there are the most progressive candidates, like in the Republicans' Tea Party example, the most conservative candidates, really mounting an insurgency that energizes the people from your party, turnout increases, and maybe you win more.
Well, you can do both. So, you know, clearly you want to energize young voters. You have to have higher turnout from young voters. First of all, the odds do favor the Democrats taking control. What I object to is banking on it, you know, assuming that it's a done deal and therefore you can worry about gubernatorial campaigns. People have to be very focused on the House. And look at somebody like Connor Lamb, you know, who just won that special election in Pennsylvania. He was progressive, but he didn't pass every litmus test that liberals might want. He was not the most progressive candidate you can imagine. And he was tailoring his campaign for the district. So people need to make an assessment on who is the best candidate to win in these primaries, to beat the Republican in the fall, not who matches up best with, you know, their particular positions on particular issues. And I think what, you know, there's a lot of good that's going on right now inside the Democratic Party. There's some really exciting new candidates, more women than ever. I think a lot of Democrats get that pragmatism is a moral imperative this time and that they need to really stay focused on the House of Representatives. But there are a lot of other Democrats who are indulging in what I think of as a kind of moral vanity where we've seen in prior elections that not really focused on getting it done. So the most liberal candidate might, you know, match up with one's personal preferences, might generate some young turnout. But remember, we're talking about Republican districts that need to be flipped. These, some of these districts, Trump carried by, you know, 15 points. And if they're going to be flipped, you know, nominating a Cynthia Nixon-type candidate there is probably not the best way to do so.
So, Democratic listeners, maybe you know our guest, longtime progressive writer Jonathan Alter, who's concerned that the Democrats may squander their opportunity to take back the House by having too many internal battles over ideological purity, including not just in House primaries, but even, as he says in his column, the Cynthia Nixon primary against Andrew Cuomo, which of course is for governor of New York, because it can distract attention and money from the flippable Republican House seats in the New York media market. 212-433-WNYC, if you have an opinion or a question, 212-433-9692. And let's take a phone call from Neil in Plainfield. You're on WNYC. Hi, Neil.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that just because the Democrats are having open and honest primary challenges doesn't mean that the voters aren't going to turn out to vote for whichever candidate wins. Okay? The Republicans have proven over the years that they can put up radical candidates and win with them. I think that if the Democratic voters choose a more radical candidate, they're still going to get out the vote and they're still going to win. Hopefully, they're going to pick people, though, that will have a better chance of winning.
Neil, thank you very much. I'm going to go right to another caller, David in Bayonne, who I think wants to put a finer point even on Neil's statement. David, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thanks, Brian. First of all, Hillary Clinton is not president. Oh, okay. Why? She was supposed to be president. She's not. And the next Democrat that we need to move is Nancy Pelosi, who people just don't like. And we cannot afford to take anything for granted in this House race, because the House is a cesspool of idiots that are following the idiot president. Can you tell I'm a lifelong Democrat?
David, thank you very much. I'll take that last question as rhetorical. Jonathan?
So, first of all, I totally agree with David, that you just can't take anything for granted, and people need to understand the stakes. So, for instance, if Mueller is fired, the investigation will continue if Democrats take control of the House of Representatives. They will have subpoena power, and they can just pick up where Mueller left off. They can haul Scott Pruitt in front of their committees every day, and, you know, and tie him up in knots and all the rest of the Trump people who are wrecking the country right now. So the stakes are immensely important. And I agree, actually, that even though Nancy Pelosi did some great things and was instrumental in the enactment of Obamacare, I think it would be really smart and patriotic of her sometime, you know, this fall to say that she will not be a candidate for speaker. It would take away a weapon that a lot of Republicans are using against Democrats in these House races. And I hope she does that. You know, I think she can be a great speaker if she got a chance again, but it's all hands on deck to get the House back. Everything flows from that. So, you know, I guess my real concern is that people don't, they don't even know who a lot of these candidates are. Like people in New Jersey, they don't know that Tom Malinowski has a very good shot in a district there, that Mikey Sherrill has a very good shot in another district there. In New York, they don't know candidates like Dana Balter and Ann Messenger up in the Syracuse area, and Pat Ryan and Antonio Delgado, who are running in the primary to face off against John Faso not too far from New York, and there's an assemblyman named Anthony Brindisi who's challenging Claudia Tenney way upstate. So these are names that don't mean anything to most of your listeners. My argument is they should be focusing on them and not on Cynthia Nixon and other things that are a distraction. It's like worrying about, you know, criticism of Cuomo, and there's plenty of criticism that's valid, but it's like worrying about tennis elbow when you have cancer. You know, we need to be really, really focused here on how to protect our democracy, and that's all about the House of Representatives.
How much do you throw the Russia investigation into this bucket? You just touched on Scott Pruitt's scandal and some other things, and, you know, there are polls certainly out there. I think there are a lot of candidate experiences out there that discover that except for the already energized party activists, people are not coming up to the candidates and saying, will you please do something about Russia interfering in our democracy or Trump's possible collusion or obstruction of justice, rather than will you do something to fix the economy? How much are you in that camp?
So I think if you listen to what the candidates are hearing, and that's the most important thing, it doesn't matter what pundits like me think, they're hearing about kitchen table issues, health care, jobs, retirement security, student loans. And so the Democrats who are doing well and are going to win are the ones who are focused on what their constituents care about. And the, you know, the threats to democracy, I think, should be part of their stump speeches so that they help educate the public about how fragile democracy is and how the guardrails of our democracy have just been blown through by Donald Trump. So that's all important. But the headline for these candidates has to be about issues where the voters really live, these kitchen table issues.
Matt in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Jonathan Alter. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. In addition to Mr. Alter's fears that Nixon will diminish the blue wave, does he also fear that Nixon might get on the ballot, split Democratic votes, and end up with a Republican governor?
Well, I think that's something that you can't dismiss entirely. She's got the Working Families Party endorsement. She's going to be on the WFP line in November. So she's already on the ballot in November.
So I should say that the head of the Working Families Party, Bill Lipton, has been on the show twice in the last month saying if Nixon fails to win the Democratic primary, that they will remove her from the Working Families Party line so that she doesn't split the more liberal vote with Cuomo and elect a Republican.
Yeah, I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, I think the reason that Lipton has been saying that so strongly is that the SEIU and the Communication Workers of America, the two major unions supporting the Working Families Party, basically pulled their support because they're very upset about this, very concerned about the same things I am. And I actually got an email from Randy Weingarten yesterday about my piece. She was also strongly in agreement.
That's the head of the teachers union.
Yeah, the head of the teachers union nationally. And, you know, so I think a lot of organized labor understands that maybe in another year you could have this kind of fight between Nixon and Cuomo. But this year, there are just much, much bigger fish to fry.
Joanne in Morris County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Okay, I'm watching this from Jersey and thinking that we need to focus on the long game. I mean, I resent another. I mean, as good as her positions are, I resent the concept of another person with no political experience, another celebrity trying to horn into the political process. When what we need to focus on is the long game of getting the House back, flipping the House. I'm in the 11th district, and I've been contributing and watch and helping and doing a little.
That's NJ11, the Seat That
NJ11,
Republic.
Yes, NJ 11th is a wonderful thing, and
where there's already a potential victory because the long-term Republican incumbent Rodney Frelinghuysen isn't even going to run for re-election, right?
Yes, and that is a great thing for this district if we can hold on and keep our eyes on the ball. The ball is flip the House.
Joanne, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yes, I totally agree with the caller. I also live out in that area right adjoining that district. The western parts of that district are very conservative. So just so that just because Rodney Frelinghuysen retired and it's an open seat doesn't mean it's a gimme for the Democrats. And this is true all across the country. There are 46 Republican retirements, but I think there's a kind of a complacent assumption on the part of at least some Democrats. Oh, okay, that Republican retired. We're going to now take the seat. I mean, they're looking at $400 million that the Koch brothers and their political network have pledged to spend in these House races and state legislative races. So a lot of these Democrats, even if they're fighting for open seats, they're going to get buried under a pile of cash this fall. And that's something I think is of real concern, because even though the wealthiest candidates don't necessarily win for president, the best funded candidates, at the House level, it's very, very common that the candidate that spends the most wins the election. And so this is something that Democrats are going to have to think about. You know, how deep do they want to dig? How much do they want to get involved with their elbow grease, going door to door, canvassing, the other things that are necessary to get this done? And I do think the Democrats recognize the stakes. I think some of these callers have indicated this, and a lot of independents and Republicans. I've talked to Republicans who privately say the Democrats need to take the House just for basic small D Democratic or small R Republican accountability in this country. These folks need to, you know, lose control of at least the House of Representatives for that accountability to take place. So even though, you know, a lot of people split their tickets, they vote for the person under normal circumstances, all that makes a lot of sense. This year is different.
Our callers, thoroughly unscientific poll though this is, are firmly divided. We have people like last caller who seriously agree with you. We have people like our next caller, Alex in Greenpoint, who I think seriously disagree. Alex, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I think it's a serious insult to the intelligence of Democratic voters to imply that we all just fall in line blindly with whoever the most well-funded or the most well-known candidate is. Irregardless of your opinions of Cynthia Nixon, Cuomo is an extremely corrupt individual. He got rid of his corruption commission once they decided to investigate him. So I think that as a New York State voter, it would be wise to consider, just because somebody is a centrist, that does not, by definition, imply that their platform is what's best for Democratic voters in New York State. And I'll take my reply off the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. So I think Alice makes an interesting point, and I think there are plenty of valid criticisms of Governor Cuomo. The question is whether those valid criticisms are relevant in a year like 2018. And I think when Cynthia Nixon says that he's, quote, governing like a Republican, that's just not true. You know, you could argue that her positions are more in line with yours, her positions are better for New York State. You could argue that he shouldn't have abolished the Corruption Commission, all kinds of other things. But, you know, he is against fracking. He's for a big hike in the minimum wage. He's moving left on a variety of other issues, family and medical leave. So this idea that he's a Republican is not in accordance with the facts. But the major issue is whether this is a luxury that Democrats can afford right now. Now, I'm not talking about, I'm not saying Cynthia Nixon needs to drop out or that people shouldn't vote for Cynthia Nixon. I'm talking about the time, money, effort that Democrats expend and where it should be best expended. So it's a kind of a resource allocation question. And people can say, well, you know, I hate all this talk about money in politics. You know, I guess my reaction to that would be, again, I completely agree. I'm strongly for campaign finance reform. But you got to put first things first, as Franklin Roosevelt said. And the first issue this year is getting back the House of Representatives so we can check this dangerous presidency. And everything else is commentary.
Now, this could be interesting. We have a caller, Dave, who says he's working on a high-profile House race and has some intelligence to add. Hi, Dave. Thanks so much for calling us.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add to the conversation, you know, as I'm listening from out here in America over your app on my smartphone, that I'm working on a high-profile race. It's a Democratic primary. We do, even though we're favored to win, we have pretty much all the endorsements of both the progressive wing and the establishment, and this candidate is in the Red to Blue program. We do have a primary challenger, and though it might be, you know, a little annoying for us that we have to allocate resources to this, it is absolutely that candidate's right to run, and we need to get rid of this or get over this debate about litmus tests. There need to be litmus tests. Otherwise, we just have dinos, you know, Democrats in name only. So primaries are about figuring out where the party is and where the voters are. That's why we have them. So those candidates are strong going into a general election. We need to focus on winning general elections, period, no matter who the party picks, or rather who the voters pick, because that's what matters.
Dave, in your candidate's case, and I gather you don't want to disclose who the candidate is or where out there in America you are, and I get that. Could it not work either way that, assuming your candidate wins the primary, that the primary challenge will have strengthened your candidate for the general election or will have weakened your candidate for the general election, as can also sometimes happen?
Right. I mean, I can't really disclose much detail. I can tell you that I work in field operations, and for us, this is actually a blessing. This is an excuse to go knock on doors and get IDs super early in the summertime when people actually want to go out and camp. So it is absolutely to our benefit to have these primaries. And again, at the end of the day, it's about going out and trying to reach the 49% of people who didn't vote in 2016. We need to focus less on, diminishing primary challengers and focus on winning votes and getting people back to the polls, because our issues will win. We're the winning side. We just need to get people out.
If you're in a flippable red district, what is your candidate using, would your candidate use as a general election strategy to get out the vote? And how do you view the Russia investigation in that context?
This candidate is not talking much about Russia. We're focusing, you know, as you guys were highlighting, on, you know, the kitchen table issues. That's what people care about. The Russia investigation, as you mentioned as well, very important. It's real. There's a certain portion of the Democratic Party that has, you know, refuses to accept that. And I think that they need to, you know, among other things or lessons that that wing could learn, it's, you know, that this is happening, but also we have primaries for a reason. I'll say this as well. And when you get involved in a primary, you agree to support the person who wins. You don't just throw up your hands. You know, I was a Bernie Sanders guy back in 2016, and I actually worked for the senator. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of friends who were like, oh, well, I'm voting for Stein. I'm voting for, you know, whoever now. And that's not the way it works. You know, we knew the game was more or less rigged. We still agreed to play the game. And that means you support whoever the nominee is.
Dave, thank you very much for chiming in. Call us again if you're comfortable doing that as the campaign goes on. Jonathan, go ahead.
I just want to say, I think everything Dave said was absolutely spot on. you know, that these primaries can often be helpful because it's like spring training or something. You get out there, you meet the voters earlier than you would otherwise. But the key is whether the loser of the primary pledges not just to support the winner, but to go out and campaign for the winner with his or her people in the fall. And I almost think that the Democratic National Committee should ask every primary candidate in the United States to pledge that they will campaign for the winner of the Democratic primary, because the stakes are that high. The only place where it makes sense to try to get some primary challengers out of the race is in California, where
I'm so glad, and just telegraphing to our listeners, I'm so glad you brought this up. This was one of the most interesting things in your article that New Yorkers don't know. Go ahead.
So California has a very interesting law that was meant to try to kind of tamp down extremism in both parties. It's called a top two primary, and the top two vote getters face off in the general election in November, whether they're both Democrats, both Republicans, one Democrat, one Republican. The top two are in the general election. So if you have too many from one party, they can fragment the vote and you can get top two from the other party. And there are a few districts where there are only a couple of Republicans running and like a half dozen Democrats. And so it's quite possible that the top two in that flippable district will both be Republicans and Democrats will lose a chance to pick up a seat. And so if the Democrats fall short and we have a very depressing outcome where the Republicans, you know, extremists, the banana Republicans, I call them, are still in control of the House of Representatives, it may be because certain candidates and Democratic candidates in California who were trailing badly in the polls did not agree to withdraw before the primary.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Jonathan Alter, last question. As Chuck Todd says, if it's Tuesday, it must be election day somewhere. And today it's in Westchester. And I know you write about national politics. I'm just curious if you're paying attention at all to this local race. It's a special election for a vacant New York State Senate seat in Westchester. And while there's reason to talk about the gubernatorial primary, if this seat is won by the Democratic candidate, it's going to be much more likely that the Democrats take control of the New York State Senate, which would flip a lot of policies. So I'm just curious if you're watching that race and have any thoughts on the importance of it in Westchester's 37th district from Yonkers to Rye.
So there are so many people you can talk to who know more about it. All I basically know is what you just described. And sometimes these state Senate seats are enormously impactful. You know, in the 2010 midterms, the Democrats not only lost the House of Representatives, they lost 750 state legislative seats across the country. And it's those state decision makers who draw the maps for the next election and all kinds of other policies. So unfortunately, turnout is often low in those elections, and I hope it's a little different today, as well as an election, a special election in Arizona that people are taking a look at. Democrats have done well in special elections, but the problem is it's a little bit misleading because they can get those elections crowdsourced and the challengers can have plenty of money. But when you have 435 different elections in November, you can't get the focus that you would get either on this race today or on any other race. And that's where the big Koch brothers money comes in. So I think people need to go to flippable.org, indivisible.org, dig deep. As Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote about the early days of World War II, this is no ordinary time. That was her quote from Eleanor Roosevelt. So, you know, normally people might go, why is this pundit up there, you know, urging everybody to have a Democratic House of Representatives? Because this is no ordinary time, and our democracy is on the line. So people need to get involved in ways that they might not have wanted to in the past.
Daily Beast opinion writer Jonathan Alter, his new column, Democrats are set to win big. Here's how they could blow it. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot, Brian.